Hello and welcome to another edition of the Pro Basketball Talk podcast here at NBC Sports. I am Kurt Heelan, the managing editor of Pro Basketball Talk, and we are joined today by one of the PBT men, one of the regular writers for us, and just an all-around good guy, Sean Hyken, based out of Chicago.
That part is debatable.
Your mom wanted me to say that for you, so.
I appreciate you giving her what she wanted.
Yeah, that was my Christmas gift to her. So everybody loves you as far as your mom knows, Sean. And we're just going to talk about some of the topics going on around the NBA. And I think if you're talking about everything going on around the NBA right now, that still everything starts and stops in Golden State in the Bay Area, where it turns out, Sean, they're human.
They lost a game?
Yes. Yeah, I know. Who knew?
They almost lost. They almost lost one game, and they won that game. And then the next day, they actually did lose a game.
Yeah, didn't it feel a lot like? And I don't know. Were you surprised by this? Because after watching like Boston, it looked like a boxer working the body. You had a feeling Milwaukee was going to come in and get the knockout.
I kind of thought so, just because it went to double overtime, so you knew they were going to be exhausted the next day. And I know Milwaukee had played in Toronto the night before too, so they were also going to be on a back to back. But they didn't play double overtime. And, you know, even if Klay was going to play, and Klay did end up playing in the Milwaukee game, but even if he did play, he wasn't going to be 100% because his ankle was bad enough. If his ankle was good enough to play in the Milwaukee game, it probably would have been good to play in the Boston game if he was 100%. So I think he was playing hurt because they wanted to keep the streak going. So I kind of thought, especially like later on in the game, and I was like half watching it because I was at the Bulls game that night, so I kind of had one eye on the court and one eye on the TV monitor by my seat watching the Warriors game. But like, it seemed like they were making a run. They got it down to, I think they tied it at one point in the second half. They got it down to three, and then the Bucks just kept going on a run. It was kind of like the opposite of what usually happens in these Warriors games. The other team catches up, and then you blink and the Warriors are like up 15 again. So it was kind of the opposite of that. So I don't know what I kind of, at a certain point, I think halfway through the fourth quarter, I kind of thought, okay, the Warriors are actually going to lose this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. It was about the middle of the fourth where they'd made a little run and got it close. And Milwaukee pushed it up, not to some crazy number. They got it back up to like nine. And I'm like, this is it. You could just feel it. Like, this was the one time where, just because they were a little bit tired, because they weren't as sharp, and I think more than the offensive end, which, you know, look, they're the Warriors. They can get some points. Their defense wasn't as sharp that night. And I think that's, look, seventh game of a road trip, second night of a back-to-back after playing, you know, double overtime. They're not going to be as sharp on their rotations. And so
they miss Harrison Barnes, too.
Yeah, they miss Harrison Barnes a lot, especially when they try to go small. Do you think, and I tend to think this is true, I tend to think that this is actually not the worst thing at all for them, in that it takes some pressure off them to keep the streak going, and they can start resting some guys and just kind of focusing on the stuff they should be doing during the regular season?
Right. I mean, you kind of saw that with the Heat in 2013 when they had the 27-game streak also. Like, by the end of it, like, obviously they wanted to keep it going. They wanted to get to the 33 to beat the Lakers' record from 72. But, you know, by that time, you could tell they were just exhausted from pushing this streak and how they had kind of gotten caught up in the hype of it. And I think that was maybe starting to happen with Golden State. Now, personally, just as a fan, I'm a little disappointed that it's ended.
Yeah.
Because I wanted, first of all, I mean, I definitely wanted it to be still be undefeated on Christmas when they played the Cavs, especially since it seems like, as we found out yesterday, it seems like Kyrie Irving is probably going to be back for that game. But I also just wanted to see them get to the 33 wins, the 72 Lakers record, which, by the way, can we talk about that for a second? To me, the streak is this season. I don't want to hear 28 games. No, it's a new streak. A new streak is a new season.
I completely and totally agree with you. Everything changes in the offseason. It didn't much with the Warriors in this case, but rosters change, everything changes. Yeah, so I mean, just there's no continuity season to season. I don't think you can carry those kind of records over at all. So I'm with you. It's all within one season, and I particularly wanted the Christmas thing. That would have just been huge. And I'll tell you, just here at NBC, if you're a Comcast subscriber and happen to live in the Bay Area or Philadelphia with the Sixers or Boston with the Celtics, whatever, you can stream through NBC. You can stream these games. Without getting into specifics, the numbers for the Warriors streams have gone through the roof about the last 2 weeks as this streak has gone on. So there was a lot of like, can they keep this going? Can they keep this going? I'm like, it's going to, I thought it would happen sometime during that road trip. And at first I thought for a while, I'm like, they might get through this thing when they won about five. But after that Celtic game, I had a feeling. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm disappointed.
Well, and to that point in Boston, the Comcast, the CSN Boston website was live streaming Steph Curry's pregame warm-up for
yes.
a road game.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like,
and
that's
now
that's how big this thing has gotten.
By the way, you can also, if you go online, it's not hard to find the chart of his pregame shots. They're
yeah,
charting
I
his pregame shots.
I did a post of that on PBT.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just ridiculous, like, how far this has gone. And by the way, Steph Curry, pretty good in warm-ups when you're not guarding him, it turns out.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Yeah, he's going to be okay. But I am sad about Chris. I'm still all, by the way, though, looking forward to it, because this is that, this has always been the thing with the Cavs, was, obviously, they were not healthy during the finals last year. Obviously, this year, they have struggled like the Washington game when teams have gone small on them. And next week in a podcast before Christmas, we will be previewing all the Christmas Day games so that you can be prepped for those and sound smarter than your uncle. But this was one of those situations where you can keep saying, well, they're struggling with small ball or whatever. It doesn't matter until they get Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love healthy and in this, because that changes, you know, they can throw a Love, Tristan Thompson front line out there with Shumpert and Kyrie and LeBron and be small and still be really effective. And we don't know. So I'm looking forward to starting to see that. And obviously, I think it's just going to be an entertaining game that, by the way, will mean nothing if these teams meet in June.
Of course not. No, nothing that happens in the regular season matters at all in terms of, you know, these matchups.
No. No, it's outside of like, hey, coaches will watch that film and note like, hey, we had some success with X against Y and file that away for something they might want to use down the line, but that's about as far as it goes.
But like, it's going to be totally different. You never know who's yeah. going to be injured by then, you know, if everybody's going to be healthy, if, you know, if somebody, like, let's say Brandon Rush randomly, like, becomes, you know, a regular contributor and stays in the rotation after Harrison Barnes gets back. Like, let's say that's a thing, and that wasn't a thing right now.
No,
you know, random stuff like that. Like, there's always going to be random stuff that you can just, like, you can't predict in December what's going to happen in June.
Exactly. It is one of those things where, and we've done it at PBT previewing a final, so we'll put up the, you know, hey, their season record was 4-0 or 1-3. It rarely is very telling. Often, you know, it's when you catch teams. Did you catch them on a back-to-back? Did you catch them? Look, if Houston's probably going to make the playoffs out west, but if you caught them a couple games early in the season, is that indicative of what they look like later in the season? Probably not. I don't think they're, you know, again, we can debate how good they actually are, but if you caught them early in the season when they were really slumping, they're not going to be that bad, one would hope. So, I don't, like I said, I don't think this is all bad for them at all. I think that this is going to be, I think they can get back to the work of the regular season now, and I expect, I wouldn't be shocked if they lost another game or two before Christmas and they start resting. Like, Steph Curry just gets a night off. Some of these guys, Draymond Green gets a night off. I think that that is a far more likely scenario now.
Do you think they're going to get to 72?
No. I got a feeling that between resting guys, losing a couple, that they're going to get close to where they were last year, 67, 68, 69, but I don't think they'll push for the 72. And I don't think if they don't push for it, I don't know. Well, I mean, I don't know, but I don't think so. What do you? Do you think they can get there? I mean,
see,
I think they can.
I'm kind of going the other way. I think that, you know, now that they lost the game, now, you know, obviously the magic of the streak is over. And, you know, you're starting to see the, oh, well, hey, the Spurs have a chance. Of, like, I think the Warriors, as we've very much seen, you know, with all the stuff from the offseason, like the stuff that different people were saying about them, we've seen, like, how they hear what people are saying about them. So I think, you know, with the streak being over, they're hearing a lot of this talk that, oh, maybe they aren't invincible. You know, the Spurs are going to be right there in the playoffs. I think they want that 72 still.
Yeah, I wouldn't be – if they got close, they might go for it. Part of this, again, is this is a team, much like the Heat the last, you know, couple of years when LeBron was there, you're trying to define your legacy. And these kind of streaks become part of that when you're ultimately talking about – you know, we don't talk about those – Laker teams that lost, but you know, you talk about the 72 Lakers and their multiple, you know, finals trips before that where they just couldn't get over the hump. That streak comes up. That was the year. I think that becomes, if they can get there to 72, obviously that's part of the Jordan legacy. So that will be part of it if they can get there. But I don't know how hard they're going to push between now and say mid-March to get there. But if that number looks doable in March, does it, you know, do they start to really think about gearing up and chasing it? It's very possible. We'll move on to less thrilling news, I guess, at least in terms of the reaction. Big news that came out on Monday via, of course, Adrian Wojnarowski at Yahoo Sports. It's like big news via, it's just pretty much always going to be Woj.
Right.
It came that Bill Kennedy, one of the longtime and better respected referees around the league, has come out as gay. I think first off, you and I are going to be on the same page on this news, which is good for him coming out, living his life.
Yeah, congrats. Many years of happiness and yeah. health to him.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always happy to see somebody living their life as they are rather than having to hide parts of it. So good for him.
Absolutely.
The second part of that is Rondo was suspended for a game for what he said in Mexico City to Bill Kennedy, and it turns out it was some homophobic slurs. And if you look back at that, you know, and what happened to that game, boy, Rondo should feel a little lucky that it's only one game, frankly.
I think so, too. And I think he should feel lucky that the suspension happened before this became public via Bill Kennedy's announcement that he's
yes.
gay. Because if Bill Kennedy had come out as gay, and then we found out that like this was the impetus for it, but there hadn't been a punishment handed down from the league yet, I feel like Rondo would have gotten much bigger suspension since there would have been this kind of public pressure on Adam Silver to really take a stand on that.
Actually, I that is a really good point. I think that that's very, very true. And it just, I'll tell you what, Rondo has worked hard, and the Sacramento Kings have worked, you know, I don't know.
He's been great this season.
He's been impressive on the court, although his on-off numbers suggest that, you know, I mean, part of that is that the Kings aren't very good, but his on-off numbers are a little make you wonder, like how much, he's putting up numbers, but is he helping the team as much as it seems on paper? That said, you know, as good as he's playing, man, if you're the media relations guy for the Kings right now, poor Chris, this is a rough job, and I know the guy, I'm not going to get into it too much, but boy, that's a rough job this year. And
I don't know how much they're paying him, but they're not paying him enough.
Yeah, well, the good news is he can go into, like, crisis management PR after this, handling, like, Exxon Valdez stuff. This is going to be something that doesn't blow over quickly, particularly in California, particularly in a, you know, not just a blue state, but a blue state with a large gay population. It's going to be something Rondo's going to have to address.
A blue state that was the center of this, of the Supreme Court case where they had the ban
yes.
on gay marriage, the amendment, and then it got overturned by the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal there. I mean, it's a big deal everywhere.
But yeah, exactly.
It's especially a big deal there.
Yeah, he's going to have to address this and deal with it and you know, go through the obligatory public apologies and all that, which, you know, it's always hard to read how much somebody really genuinely means that versus knowing that that's what they have to say. But it is...
Well, remember Kobe, like,
yeah.
4 or 5 years ago, he said a similar thing to
yeah.
an official, and then I think he was fined $100,000 for it, and then he came out and he said, look, yeah, that was ignorant. I'm not going to say that word anymore. I apologize for it.
Yeah.
It seems like, you know, since then, and I actually remember, like, a couple of years ago, I just randomly remember this, someone called Kobe that word on Twitter, and he retweeted it, and he said, you shouldn't say that word, and then that person came back at him and said, yeah, well, you said it to a ref, and then Kobe replied to that and said, yeah, and that was ignorant and not cool on my part, and I learned from it.
Yeah, and I think that's
the right way to handle it.
It is the right way to handle it, and this is a cultural shift that is going on, and you and I are both in NBA locker rooms and you know, around players at even various levels. That slur is far from uncommon. That is a word thrown around pretty casually, and it's a shift that's going away from, you know, we're going away from seeing that as much. So it's a good cultural shift, but it's going to be a slow one, and there's going to be some painful moments. Rondo stepped right in the middle of it, and I think you're spot on. You know, I wonder, it's not going to look good for Adam Silver. This is one of those things where people are already saying, one game, huh? One game, it's going to... You know, Silver hasn't had many missteps since he's taken that office.
Well, usually, guys, the thing is, one game, as much as, you know, you and I can agree that, yeah, it probably should have been more than one game, how many times is a guy suspended for saying something to a
yeah.
referee at all? It's usually
yeah.
just a fine.
Yeah, exactly.
The one game suspension in itself, like, we, as far as, like, what we think the suspension should be, it's not that severe. You know, we think it should maybe be 5 games or something closer to that, but one game suspension for saying something to a referee is actually pretty harsh by their standards for this.
By the precedent, yeah. They, and You've just made a new friend with the referees union. So, who have been on this topic for a little while, that they thought that how referees are and our officials are treated by coaches, by players, is an ongoing thing.
Has that been in the news recently?
Yeah, exactly. So this is not going away anytime soon. So I fear we will be talking about this again. It'll be interesting for how this goes for Rondo.
But yeah, congrats to Bill Kennedy.
Yeah. So we'll move on and talk about one other interesting bit of news out of Sunday. Memphis has decided that they've got to embrace small ball a little bit, and finally made a move, frankly, they should have made a little while ago. Tony Allen has been pretty dreadful this year. His defense has slowed a little, but after what everybody saw Andrew Bogut and the Warriors did to him on offense last season on the offensive end, he's gotten that treatment everywhere. He's being ignored on offense unless he's within 5 feet of the hoop. So he's been dragging their offense down. So he got moved to the bench. He's coming off the bench, as is Zach Randolph. Courtney Lee and Matt Barnes come in and start, and that's not enough to get them the win over Miami because they gave up an 11-0 run at the end of the game. But I think this is a move Memphis needed to make.
Yeah, and it's the end of an era.
Yeah.
Let's pour one out for the grit and grind era.
Yeah, they are definitely, it's definitely changing, and I think some of that identity needs to be there, but that this team can't win. I mean, this team can't win that way right now. Okay, I mean, look, let me put it this way. While they are 13-12, as we are speaking on Monday, they actually have the point differential of an 8-17 team.
That sounds about right. Well, because how much of that has gotten, because they lost by 50 to Golden State. They lost by like 30 to Cleveland. So I wonder how
and Charlotte, those two games. Don't forget Charlotte blew them out by like 20-something too. I mean,
yeah, how much of that point differential is just skewed by those three games?
Yeah,
which
but
I realize you're kind of going down a dangerous path, taking out a few games. But it's like they get blown out by the Warriors. Like, okay, great, everybody gets blown out by the Warriors except for Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that there is something to that. I mean, we are dealing with a little bit of small sample size, but they are clearly not as good a team this year.
No, they're not.
And frankly, that starts right at the top. Marc Gasol has not been as sharp, not offensively, and particularly not defensively. Where he, you know, 2 years ago, when he earned, and I, you know, not everybody got this. I think casual fans didn't always get this. He earned Defensive Player of the Year. That was a guy who, like, so anticipated the play that it didn't. He's not coming flying in from the weak side like Serge Ibaka knocking the ball four rows deep because he was already there. Like, he just read everything. He's not doing that, and he's a step slow right now, and it shows on their defense. They're bottom 10 actually in offense and defense.
That's not good. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Like, there was a stretch there for a couple of years, like, while Dwight was dealing with his back stuff, that Marc Gasol was the best center in the league, not just, like you said, his impact defensively, but he's one of the best passing big men in the league. He has that hook shot that's unguardable.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of, you know, he's on the wrong side of 30 now, and it's just kind of, he's had a couple of injuries. It's just kind of, he's just kind of on the downslope of his career, and there's just nothing you can do about it. The problem is just like a lot of the guys on that team are like that. Really, Mike Conley is the only guy that I think is still, you can say, in his prime.
Yeah, and by the way, his contract comes up this year.
He's gonna get so paid. This
yeah,
summer.
He's gonna get.
I think he's gonna stay in Memphis. They're gonna throw the 5-year max at him, and they're gonna rebuild around him. But he's gonna get paid either way.
Yeah, but there's so much work that needs to be done to that roster, which brings us kind of to the other issue, which is the news came out that Dave Joerger, their coach, could be in trouble. Of his job could be threatened over the next week or so. I don't know how much of this I really lay at his feet, because I look at the construction of this team and think, if you put this roster together and you thought that Jeff Green and Courtney Lee were the answers and Matt Barnes were going to be the answers to your problems, that's your mistake. Like, this team wasn't built to win in a small ball era or a grit and grind era. They're just kind of okay.
Yeah, you know, it actually kind of reminds me of the team that I cover, which is the Bulls. And they're just kind of in that thing where they're kind of in that similar spot where their roster is just kind of a bunch of guys. And it's just not really built all the way one way. It's not all the way old school. It's not all the way new school. It's just kind of a bunch of guys, and they have a lot of talent, but it just doesn't, you don't know how it fits in the league.
Yeah, and
so I kind of view the Grizzlies as like the Western Conference analog to the Bulls, where like, they on reputation, they're one of the teams that everybody has as like, oh, they're going to be a contender, and then they're just kind of middling.
Yeah, and I am surprised at how weak they've been, particularly defensively. I mean, I knew Marc Gasol was aging, although that happened a little faster than I thought. Tony Allen has really dropped off the map pretty quickly, but the system wasn't there, and it's not fitting. But again, if you're getting rid of Dave Joerger, who are you bringing in? Like, where are you going? What is your choice now? Are you bringing in somebody?
Thibodeau.
What?
Tom Thibodeau.
So you're going to truly go old school then. And by the way, that's a front office with John Hollinger. Thank you. Suddenly went blank. John Hollinger and some analytics guys, and that'll be fun. Let's bring Thibodeau into an analytics team.
I don't know, Jeff Van Gundy, another guy who's not huge on the analytics.
Yeah, but would Jeff take that? I mean, I don't know if Jeff would leave for that job.
I don't know either.
I mean, I don't know.
Well, I think either him or Tibbs would leave if they were to clean out the front office and give him like the Stan Van Gundy, Doc Rivers type of role where he gets to do both the personnel and the coaching.
Well, yeah, and Stan has done pretty well at that, and we can debate where Doc is on that. He's got some work to do, but Doc's got some mid-season work to do if the Clippers want to compete. But that's a whole nother podcast.
I
think if you're letting go of a coach mid-season, you need a game plan for what you're doing next. Even if that's putting in an interim coach to get you to the off-season where you're going to make some changes.
Right, that's what, like, even with the Rockets, when they fired McHale, they were just like, okay, we're just going to give J.B. Bickerstaff this season and just, like, see what he can do. Like, they committed to that right away.
But talk about another roster that's kind of that same, like, look, there's a lot of talent on that roster. They should be better than they are, but you look at the leaders on that roster and you look what they're doing right now. By the way, they're 12-12. They're playing much better. Look at their schedule. They are in the middle of the soft part. They've looked better playing against bad teams. I need to see them beat some good teams, and that starts in a week or two. Their schedule ramps up again. Then if they keep winning, I'll buy in a little bit that they're at least sort of back. But that's another. You know, I think a lot of times where but isn't that the NBA? You can't fire the players.
No, so. You can't. You have to fire the coach. It's going to be, and you know, another guy that has kind of been on the hot seat in recent. Weeks in terms of different reports that have come out as Lionel Hollins in Brooklyn. Speaking of former Grizzlies grit and grind personnel, Lionel Hollins seems like he might be on the outs in Brooklyn, but it's like that roster just isn't very good. No. I don't know if it's on him.
No, and by the way, they're actually, they started 0-9, they're 7-7 since then and playing okay. Like not, you know, they're not tearing it up, but he's got them back to playing decent basketball. Despite having arguably the worst, it's either them or the Sixers that have like the worst point guard situation in the NBA. You can flip a coin on that one.
It's not good.
Yeah. So I they're playing a little better, and I guess he's safe for now. But that's another team where, you know, if you're bringing in Lionel Hollins, you have picked your direction in terms of what style of play you're going with, because he's not coming in to go Mike D'Antoni on you. Who, by the way, we should mention, Mike D'Antoni's name has come up as a possible assistant coach.
For the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yes, I'm sorry, I should have added that in there. Yeah, which is they just renewed Brett Brown. Brett Brown isn't going anywhere, but if they're bringing in Mike, they're clearly thinking about a style and a system and a direction that they want to go. We'll see if that actually happens or what kind of role he would end up with, but that would be the first hint of where they want to take this thing long term.
I'm still trying to figure out what this new Sixers thing is between bringing in Colangelo and D'Antoni, and this D'Antoni report. Then I saw a report today that they're talking about Shane Battier as a possible guy to sign as a veteran on the bench. Now it seems like it's kind of going, they're kind of trying to go in the direction of just like making these PR moves to be like, okay, people are complaining we don't have veterans. Okay, fine, we'll sign Elton Brand or Shane Battier. You know, people are saying we need to, you know, have a better offense. Okay, we'll bring in Mike D'Antoni.
We're going to bring in Mike D'Antoni. And by the way, our best players are Joel Embiid. Well, Joel Embiid in theory, if he gets back on the court.
I don't think Joel Embiid is a thing anymore. I'm out on that.
All right. Well, we'll see where he is. But he ranked high. But Nerlens Noel, a big man. Jahlil Okafor, a guy who likes the ball in the post and doesn't have much. Like, that team isn't. If you're really going to build the run, you've got some player personnel moves to make, because that team isn't really built that way.
What they're banking on is, you know, Kendall Marshall had some good numbers when he was playing for the Lakers under D'Antoni a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, all of this seems like they're just kind of overcompensating. They're reacting too much to the criticism they've gotten. Like, either completely go away from the process and get rid of Hinkie, or make some trades and actually bring in some veterans and try to win some games this season, or just stick with it. It still feels like they're trying to have it both ways, and I don't know if that's going to work for them.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that. Look, by the way, they can't, and we've discussed this, you can't abandon the system at this point.
No, like, you've gone this far in with it. At least, you know, give it at the end of this year, maybe try to, you know, this year if they finally get their, you know, their Ben Simmons or their whoever in the draft, and then it's like, okay, now we've got our star player we can build around, and then we're going to start spending some money on free agent. But you can't pivot in the middle of a season and expect it to change anything.
No, it's kind of remember, they're going to have theirs, likely the Heat and likely the Rockets picks, depending. I mean, those have protections, but protections that probably don't come into play.
I think the Lakers are going to keep their
pick. Yeah, the Lakers, it's top, for people who don't know, it's top three protected. They would need a little, the Lakers are pretty terrible. They're probably going to end up with the second worst record. So it's going to kind of depend on lottery balls. But if that fell to fourth, they'd have that pick as well, or they'll get it next year. So they're going to have 3 to 4 first round picks, and then they'll have theirs and the Lakers next year. This is not when you start like bailing on that plan of getting draft picks. It would be good to spend some of that money. Zach Lowe had a great idea on his podcast. He's like, you know, spend some money this summer going after good young restricted free agents and overpaying them.
Well, they tried to do that last summer. They tried to. They asked Kawhi Leonard. They asked Jimmy Butler. Those guys weren't interested.
Yeah, well, I don't know that you're going to get the super elite guys. I'm thinking more like a second, third tier guy where you're like, hey, he could be good with some work.
Like Evan Fournier or something.
Yeah, exactly. That is the kind of guy you go out and get. Exactly. You don't spend your money on Aaron Aflalo. Fournier is the kind of guy you're like, hey, that's not a bad gamble. Let's see if we overpay him and get him in here, if he can develop into something for us. And you find a couple guys like that and throw some money at him. Because even if it doesn't work out, you got to pay it anyway. So,
and they've also, they're so far below the cap that it's like, what are you going to do with that money? Like,
yeah, exactly. So we're going to move on to one final topic that's always a fun one to debate here. For people who don't know, you can go online right now at NBA.com or open their app or tweet at them or whatever you want to do. Voting is open for the NBA All-Star Game.
They have this Google thing that's cool, too, where you type in NBA vote and then the team name, and then it'll just, like, pop up on the Google search results with pictures of all the players, and you can click on whichever ones you want to vote for.
So, yeah, it could not be easier to vote online right now, so you can get in your votes for. I believe Sean and I are going to discuss who we would pick for our five, our starting five in each conference. Obviously, I think we would both take Nick Young.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. after he got his first assist to Kobe, and he did it while he was wearing a pair of Yeezy Boosts in an NBA game. I think he has to get All-Star consideration just for that.
Exactly. But for people who didn't know, it was something like 700 minutes they'd been on the court, almost 800 minutes they'd been on the court together, and Nick Young had never assisted on a Kobe bucket. So that streak finally was broken. And well, let's not get into the Lakers mess. That's another half hour. All right. I'll start out in the East.
If we're doing, by the way, this is who we think should be All-Stars, right? This isn't
right. And I'm not even going to totally get into like reserves. Like, who would I vote for as my first five?
Right. So this is who you think should be the first five, not who you think is going to win the fan vote. So this is not running for Kobe winning the fan vote.
This is if I fill out a ballot, which I probably should. It'd be kind of lazy not to. If I fill out a ballot. In the East, I would have the guards is interesting in the East. I think that's a little more challenging. I would definitely vote Kyle Lowry, and it's not just because it's in Toronto. I think you got to have Lowry. He's been phenomenal. I guess I'm going to give the other spot to Wall.
I'm giving the other spot to Jimmy Butler, actually.
Oh, that's a good one too. I didn't even think of that, and I don't know why I didn't think of a two guard, but actually Butler would be a good call too. Yeah.
I actually just filled this out. I also just like did a whole crack at like my first, you know, round of like who I think would be All-Stars and did the whole rosters. I have Wall on there too, so really,
yeah. Wall, like
we both have them have him on the team, so it's really split.
Yeah, and
Butler is my guard.
Yeah, and there's no way Butler wouldn't make my full roster either. Then if I'm voting the front three front court, it's LeBron. He's pretty good.
Yeah.
Paul George, and I'm gonna put Andre Drummond in at the center.
Yeah, see, I had Kevin Love as my other. I had George and LeBron also. That seems pretty clear cut to me. But I had Kevin Love at the other one just because of how dominant the Cavs are offensively with him and LeBron on the floor at the same time. It seems like they finally really figured out how to use him right, and it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic changes once Kyrie comes back. But yeah, again we're splitting hairs because Drummond absolutely would be on my extended All-Star team, and I could absolutely see the case for him being a starter too.
Yeah, I mean, he's put up numbers on a rough team. That team is Stan Van Gundy's done a very good job with that team. He's got Drummond playing better defense than he has in years. Plus, he's been a rebounding machine. I look forward to seeing what that team looks with even more shooting as it as they move forward. Frankly, as they just, I'm not sure what the timetable is. I believe it was after the first year they get Jody Meeks back. Like, just put that guy in the rotation, let him knock down some shots. It would help them considerably with their spacing. So, I don't think when we're talking about who would be on the first five, there's going to be anybody we would pick. It's not like we're going to be like, oh my God, that guy should totally not be on the team.
Right.
The East, the West, it's just tougher because it is so crazy deep with talent. Your guards, Curry, Westbrook, right?
I mean, I think we have to keep Nick Young in that design.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, of course. How could I forget everything
but
he's...
But yeah, I mean, obviously, yes. It's Steph and Russ. By the way, did you see that thing that Russ did last night against the Jazz?
Oh, that was like the most hysterical thing.
I have never seen that in an NBA game before. For those of you who haven't seen the play, and I posted the vine of this on TVT last night when it happened, but there was 0.7 seconds left in the second quarter. Russ was inbounding the ball. He throws the ball off Jeff Withey's back, catches it, drains a jumper before the buzzer, in 0.7 seconds. Instead of inbounding it to a teammate, he inbounded it off of an opposing defender just to start the clock and then caught it and made a shot.
And I've seen, and we've seen, guys, I think Kobe's done it. I'm trying to remember some other guys who have done it, who've thrown it off the guy trying to guard the inbound turns his back, and so they bounce it off their back, get it, but it's almost like it's right under the basket and they quickly lay it in. I've never seen somebody do that and turn it into a jump shot before.
Especially
off a guy who was off ball.
Especially in 0.7 seconds.
Yeah, it was, I don't know how you pull that off so quickly. It was brilliant. And it was just, like you said, that was one of those plays where I've never seen somebody do that before in an NBA game, let alone conceive of the idea that they could pull that off in.
But you know that if there's one guy out of the top tier of NBA superstars who's going to look at his options and be like, yeah, I think this is going to have a pretty high rate of success, you know that's going to be Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
So 0% surprise when it was him that did that.
Exactly. The front court out West, again, you're getting into a deep, deep group. I think you got to have KD. Kevin Durant's there.
I don't have Durant as a starter.
Really? I've got Durant as a starter. I've got Kawhi Leonard as a starter. And I've got Anthony Davis in that last spot.
Oh, wow. We only have one of the same starters then.
Oh, who do you have in there then?
So we both have Kawhi. I have Blake Griffin.
Yeah, he was. I subbed him out at the last minute for Davis. Could easily have gone there.
And then my other one is Draymond Green.
Mm. I'll tell you who was. I'll tell you the other guy was hard for me to leave off was Derek Favors, who is playing.
Derek Favors too
is playing phenomenally in Utah, but Draymond's got to be at the All-Star game. I think if the coaches aren't putting him on, they're not appreciating what's going on with small ball.
He's the second best player on this team that just went 24-0.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the reason. Yeah, he's the reason their small ball lineup is as successful as it is. He can defend all five positions. He's become a pretty good offensive player. He's so versatile. I mean, there's really nothing he can't do. He just had the other night in the Celtics game, he just had the first 5-on-5 game since 2012. He's just the guy that just does everything on the floor.
And by the way,
this historically great Warriors team should have two starters. So part of my decision to put Draymond in there was that, but I just think Draymond has legitimately been that good. But yeah, I mean, if you have Durant in there, you have Anthony Davis in there, you can't really go wrong with any of those guys.
No.
There's so many talented guys.
And you can argue Durant hasn't played enough games. I tend to think that I don't really care about that too much. And Davis had a slow start to the season, first 5-7 games, but he's really picked it up and started to look like Anthony Davis again. It's helped that they've got some guards in there who can actually be a vague threat. That's a team that's got some real roster work to do. This brings us to the, you know, you mentioned who we'd vote in. Let's mention the big name. Do you think Kobe gets voted in as a starter by the fans?
100%.
Yeah.
I don't see any way he doesn't.
Yeah. And I personally, look, it's an exhibition, so I don't have a problem with that. If the fans want to see Kobe out there one last time, that's fine. The NBA is wise and isn't going to do something stupid like, oh, I don't know, put home field advantage of the finals based on who wins the All-Star game. That would be moronic.
It would be a shame if any of the major sports leagues in America did that.
Yeah, it would take. I've never understood that. Like, why I would turn an X. I guess you want to make
it. Because what year was this? Was this like 2001 or 2002 that the baseball All-Star game went like a bunch of extra innings and they call it a tie and Bud Selig just decided like we can't have that happening and we have to make it count for something? It was so reactionary and it was so silly.
Yeah, and how hard, I mean, honestly, are you going to play more or less hard? Are you going to manage more or less hard to try to get, you know,
especially,
I guess if you're
especially if you're somebody, if you're a player on the baseball All-Star team who is on a team that's not going to be in the playoffs, why do you care who gets home field advantage in the World Series? You're like, oh, well, you know, we've got to really help the Yankees out for American League pride.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure that really exists out there. I will add this, by the way. On Kobe, going back to that bit of brilliance. If the fans don't vote him in, I would like to see the coaches not use one of the 12 roster spots on him and have Adam Silver step in as there is precedent to do and just put him on the team as a 13th player.
I agree. I think that, you know, Jeff Van Gundy talked about this on one of the, I forget if it was on the Zach Lowe podcast that he was on or on one of the ESPN games he was on this week, but I know I heard him talk this week about maybe adding a 13th roster spot. Because the problem with this is, like, these All-Star spots, as much as the game is an exhibition game and nobody cares about what happens in the game, being selected to the All-Star team will go into a guy's Hall of Fame case. It'll go into their next contract negotiations. It would be really unfair for somebody like Derek Favors, who is not really a very high-profile guy, certainly not going to win the fan vote, and might even get overlooked by some of the coaches because he plays in Utah, which is not a team that gets a lot of attention. To see him, somebody like him or, you know, Damian Lillard, who's not on a very good Blazers team, but he's been terrific this year also, someone like that get overlooked because they want to give Kobe the lifetime achievement spot, which, again, is fine. Like, if you want to give Kobe that spot, he's, you know, it's an exhibition. Yeah. It's for the fans. Kobe's one of the 10 greatest players of all time. It's fine, but I like the idea of adding an extra roster spot just to get him on there without it being at the expense of someone who's actually played like an All-Star this season.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. Like, you could do that. I mean, honestly, I could make the case for doing that with Kevin Garnett, although he just re-upped, so he might be around for another year. And,
well, Duncan too, but Duncan legitimately, you could make a case that Tim Duncan should be an All-Star.
You could, don't know this. His offensive numbers are down. His usage rate is way down. They're not using him as much.
Well, you knew that was going to happen when they brought LaMarcus in.
Well, LaMarcus is back. Plus, you've got to get Kawhi Leonard more touches. They're finally doing that. That said, he's been phenomenal defensively. Their defensive numbers when Duncan is on the floor are fantastic. He's exactly what you want in an aging veteran who's like, I'm not going to do as much, but the things I'm going to do very well still, you know, like at a high level.
You know who else has been really good this season, and I actually had him on my reserves, is Dirk.
Dirk has been, yeah, he found like a fountain of youth with that. Because remember, we were talking before the season, and
I thought he was done.
Well, in the last two years, his numbers from his favorite spots on the floor have dipped. Like, his numbers from that, like, where he shoots that elbow fadeaway and stuff, were dipping. Like, it wasn't automatic anymore, and the shots he loved weren't falling. He was slipping a little from three, and suddenly all of that is back. Like, every shot is back on the table. He hits everything again. I think you've got to put him on there now.
Yeah, we just talked about Kobe being voted in as a starter. I want to get your take on this, because I've been talking about this with different people lately, and I think it's on the table that it's something that could happen. What do you think about the idea that Kristaps Porzingis could get voted in as a starter in the East?
Welcome to the New York market.
New York market, apparently there's been a huge push in Latvia to get him voted on, too. That's a thing.
All 12 people? Like, how many people are in Latvia?
Apparently they have a pretty big Twitter presence of Latvian NBA fans that are, you know, following Porzingis. So I think there's going to be that plus the New York market. I think it's in play for him to get voted in as a starter.
That would be crazy. And again, I don't know what I'd put him in over those guys. I don't even know if he'd... I wouldn't have him on my roster. He's actually struggled a little of late. I just... As good as he's been as a rookie, he's still been a rookie, man. He's still got some moments.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I just saw a thing in the... I think it was in the New York Post yesterday or the Daily News, one of the New York papers, that was talking about him saying that he's hit a rookie wall and he needs to find his energy again. So he's definitely taken a dip lately. But, like, in terms of, like, popularity, he's the most popular person in the city of New York right now.
Exactly. By the way, if you're those of you with League Pass looking to watch some stuff this week, the Knicks play both the Timberwolves, so Porzingis, Karl-Anthony Towns, and the Sixers this week, so Porzingis and Okafor. So you get to see some good rookie wall, you know, rookies trying to overcome the wall matchup. But Porzingis would still, to me, still actually second behind Towns in Rookie of the Year.
I agree. I think he'll win it because of narrative stuff in the New York.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how the rest of the season plays out, because I think what's being asked of Towns in terms of what he's got to do within their system is a lot more, and he's putting up phenomenal numbers. And I would love to have both of these guys. They both look like guys you'd love to have in your roster in 3 years. Like, I don't want to diminish one over the other, because they're both potentially longtime future all-stars and potential franchise cornerstones, as much as you can say that about any rookie. And frankly, Okafor might be that kind of guy too. At least a guy who's going to put up some serious numbers. But I just can't. I can't see it happening. I would want to see it happen. I think it deserves to happen. But yeah, never underestimate what Knicks or Lakers fans are capable of doing if they decide to crush the ballot box.
It's possible.
Yeah, it'd be kind of crazy. All right, Sean, thanks a lot for joining us this week and talking. We will have you back on soon, and we will be back Thursday. I believe we will be talking Celtics with A. Sherrod Blakely if everything comes together, which will be an interesting topic, because that, Sean, is another team that maybe I just wasn't high enough on them before the season, but they've been playing great ball.
I had Avery Bradley on my reserves for the East.
Yeah, well, nobody has done a better job on Steph Curry this season defensively than what Avery Bradley did in that game.
And he's suddenly shooting like 45% from three, too. He's never really been a very good shooter, but his shooting has just gotten so much better.
Yeah, clearly he has taken a step forward. They're not going to be, by the way, he's not, Marcus Smart returns. Yeah, Marcus Smart's going to the bench.
Yeah, I think so.
So, thanks a lot,
Yeah.
Sean, and we will talk soon. Everybody, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you on Thursday.